This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It was on a farm in a small town in southern Italy where Padre Pio, one of the most famous, studied, and loved saints of our time, grew up. His name is Francesco, and he was born on May 25, 1887. His parents, who were Christian, were not at all surprised when he decided to become a Capuchin. At 23, he was ordained a priest. Joined the order for 6 years because of his health problems. Once he entered the San Giovanni Rotondo convent, his main ministry was to hear confessions, to which he dedicated 14 hours of his day.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I want to talk a little bit about Padre Pio, one of the great, one of the greatest mystics of the 20th century. He was a man who bore the wounds of Christ and had unbelievable gifts. The gift of bilocation. He was seen by competent eyewitnesses levitating. He could prophesy, gift of healing, just absolutely extraordinary. And in a moment, Brett Thoman's going to be stopping by. There is a book out, What Padre Pio Saw in the Spanish Flu of 1918. And I didn't realize this, but Padre Pio actually came down with that great Spanish flu. We'll learn a little bit more about him in a minute. But before we talk to Brett, I want to share a story that a friend once told me about Padre Pio. It has to do with confession, since we were just talking about confession. And again, I just really put this on my heart to encourage you to get to that sacrament. Maybe you've been away for a long time. Maybe you've committed a horrible crime. Maybe you've committed a terrible abuse. Maybe you've had that abortion. Maybe you've, you know, been involved in something that, you know, only you know and God knows. And you're just too ashamed to get to confession, get there. You know, Satan hated Padre Pio, and he went beyond all the limits of deception when he went to Father Pio, when he went to Padre Pio, pretending to be penitent. And there was a great story. This is a testimony of an event that happened with Padre Pio. And he writes this. I think it might have been Padre Pio who shared this. He said, one day when I was hearing confessions, he said, a man came to the confessional where I was. And he was tall, he was handsome, and he was dressed with some refinement, you know, and he was kind and polite. Reminds me of the Stone song, doesn't it? Yeah, how he describes, Satan, you know the one I'm talking about, right? Sympathy for the devil. Is that the one I'm thinking of? It doesn't matter. Anyway, this guy who came in handsome and well-dressed and very polite, he started to confess his sins, which they were of every kind. And they were against God. They were against man. They were against morals. And the sins were really quite obnoxious. And Padre Pio said he was actually disoriented. In fact, for all the sins that he told me, he says, I responded to him with God's word, the example of the church and the morals of the saints. But this penitent, this man, answered Padre Pio word for word, justifying his sins. And you might do the same thing when you're in confession. You kind of justify why you did what you did, right? And again, the man did it with eloquence. He did it with an extreme ability, with, you know, profound politeness, if you will. And he excused all of the sinful action, making them sound quite normal, very natural, even, you know, comprehensible on a human level. You can almost understand why he did that, right? So he continued this way with the sins that were gruesome against God. There were sins against the saints, Our Lady. They were always very disrespectful, right? But he kept this up with even the foulest sins that he could conjure. And the answers that he gave Padre Pio just surprised him. And he says, I wonder who this was. You know, what world does he come from? And he says, I tried to look at him in order to read something on his face. And at the same time, he says, I concentrated on every word that he spoke, trying to discover any clue to his identity. But suddenly, through a very vivid and radiant, he says, an internal light, I recognized who he was. And with a sound and imperial tone, Pio says, I told him, say, long live Jesus, long live Mary. And as soon as I pronounced those sweet and powerful names, Satan instantly disappeared in a trickle of fire, leaving behind him, he said, an unbearable stench. I always loved that story. You know, I do, because I could just see Satan coming in well-dressed, well-groomed, very eloquent, justifying all of his actions. And Pio, who could read souls, going toe-to-toe with this man, ultimately calling him out. And what happened? Disappeared in a trickle of fire, leaving behind him this horrible, horrible strength. There's lots of other stories of Pio in confession. I don't have time for them, but I remember a friend telling me that one. Padre Pio is an extraordinary man, and again, he's one of my favorite saints. You know, a little more than 100 years ago, I don't know if you probably are aware of this today, the world faced the same challenges that we're facing. There's a lot of parallels. It was facing two grave menaces at the time. They had this pandemic that killed far more than COVID-19 ever did. I mean, you're talking 500 million to be exactly. I'm going to say tens of millions. It was hundreds of millions, 500 million people around the world. World War I was raging. So somewhere between 15 and I think 22 million people died as a result of the war. And then on top of that, can you imagine living in these times? Now you've got the Spanish flu, and it has ravaged every nation on the planet. The estimates range from 50 to 100 million people died as a result of it, but 500 million people were infected by the flu. But let's take, you know, 50, 100 million. That's unbelievable numbers if you think about it. So the years 1917, 1918 were terrible years for the war. 1917 was when the Bolshevik Revolution was taking place, too. It was also the year that the Mother of God came, right? Our Blessed Mother came in Fatima. She gave us the solution, told us to pray the rosary, talked about the need to do penance, warned of what loomed. But death, it seemed to be on a rampage. And fortunately, the war ended, and the flu eventually, it petered out, but, you know, it scarred the planet. And there was one man, though both of these events, you know, impacted him directly, he seemed undisturbed, and that was none other than Padre Pio. He was ordained in 1910. He had this incredible reputation for holiness. And by the time the Spanish flu came around, he was 30 years old. He contracted the flu. Obviously, he survived it. But many people in San Giovanni Rotondo, the town in which he lived, where his friary was located, they did die, including some of his brother friars. And the Italian government even conscripted some of the friars to fight in the war. So, you know, it was a bizarre time. There were only three monks left, including Padre Pio. And because he had already, you know, gained renown for his holiness, people were writing to him, asking him what to do and whether or not God was judging the world. And you might have thought it was the end of the world, right? And this included his own superior. And his answers were astounding. They were astounding. And joining me today to give us some insight into the extraordinary legacy, life, and insight of Padre Pio, especially in light of the Spanish flu, what lessons we can learn today, is Brett Thoman. He's a professional translator, a pilgrimage and travel organizer, a pilot, a husband, father. And he actually translated 7 books from Italian to English. And he's written and published 2 of them on his own. But his latest translation, this is the one I just came across. I thought we should talk about this. It's called The Pandemic of Padre Pio, Disciple of Our Lady of Sorrows. And you can learn more at his website. His website is Brett Thoman. That's T-H-O-M-A-N dot, I think it's strikingly.com or mystrikingly.com. Hey, it's good to have you with me today, Brett. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's good to be with you.
Did I get your website right? What is your website? I want to make sure I get that accurately.
That might be an old bio on the, I don't know if that's active anymore, but iconopress.com is what I just started with my new translation company, or stfrancispilgrimages.com, but iconopress.com with a C, iconopress.com.
That's
the easiest.
Bring us back in time. I mean, I love Padre Pio. I'm fascinated by the extraordinary gifts that he had, the heroic holiness that he exemplified. I didn't know until I began to read some of your writing here that Padre Pio had the flu. What happened during the pandemic, and how did it affect him?
Yeah, that's what this book is about. And just to back up just a little bit, if I could, I live in Loreto, and we're on the Adriatic coast. We're 6 hours ahead. I'm usually in bed at this hour, but I wanted to stay up and talk with you.
I didn't realize you were there. Great. I'm glad to have you. It's 11.
I'm in Italy.
Wow.
Yeah, yes. We have the Holy House of Mary. I'm sorry. There's a little bit of a delay.
No, you go right ahead.
No, we have the Holy House of Mary right up here on the hill. Ordinarily, I could look out and talk about it, but it's dark. But I do want to say to the south of here on the Adriatic is about 400 kilometers is Padre Pio's, San Giovanni Rotondo. And how this book came about, I was down there several weeks ago, actually a couple months ago at this point, and I was meeting with Stefano Campanella. He's the one who wrote this. He's the director of Tele Padre Pio, Padre Pio Radio. He's a journalist, and he's very well connected with the friars and the Capuchins there and knows a lot about Padre Pio. He was in lockdown for 2 weeks or 3 weeks on quarantine because he was in contact with some people who had the COVID virus. And while he was there, he's the kind of person who just can't sit still. So he has access to a lot of correspondence, his letters written by Padre Pio to his spiritual directors, also to spiritual directors, other friars, people have written memoirs. And there was an article written by a friar about this story, about Padre Pio having been infected by the Spanish flu, Spanish influenza. And so Stefano kind of got into it and put together this book. So I was down there meeting with him, and as I was for other things, and as we were saying bye, he said, oh, by the way, I just wrote this book on Padre Pio and the pandemic. And he emailed me the PDF file, and I looked at it, and I'm very devoted to Padre Pio for, like you said, he was such a powerful saint, and he's one of those saints that it was not just a mystic and a contemplative in his time. He's one who, and even when he was alive, he said that after his death, he would fare più rumore. He said, I will make more noise and more commotion after my life. And that's true. I've met so many people who've said they've been impacted or touched by Padre Pio in different ways. You talked about the story about the confession where when the devil left, there was this stench. You know, Padre Pio used to visit people, not just in bilocation and in dreams. He would visit people with the perfume of roses. And lots of stories there. So to me, Padre Pio, I've been in Italy for a number of years, but Padre Pio to me was another saint. And we have so many saints and blesseds in all the church, hundreds, if not thousands, all throughout up and down the peninsula. He was another saint until something happened with me along those lines. So I won't go into the details, but he touched me personally. So I'm very devoted to Padre Pio. So when Stefano told me that he wrote this book about Padre Pio and the pandemic, I said, I really want to look at that. So I read it, and it struck me because ordinarily I organize pilgrimages, and I've been doing that for about 16 years. That's why I live here with my wife. She's Italian. Last year, I think, as everybody knows, our international travel was shut down. This year, it continues to be shut down. We're still suspended. Everything's still on pause. So this kind of affected me, this pandemic, strongly. So when I heard Padre Pio had the Spanish flu, I said, I've got to read this. I read it, and I said, I want to translate it. So it's not a long book, but there's a lot in there. There's a lot of meat to it, and it's very, very powerful.
So what happened? How sick did he get? I mean, this was a flu, as I said. I think 500 million people worldwide were impacted by it. They estimate, 10 to 50 million people succumbed to it. They died. I know some of his own friars died.
That's right.
Bring us back in time. What happened, and how sick did he get? And fill everyone in.
Sure. So Stefano quotes some different experts on the time. And so, as you said, some experts have kind of lowballed the numbers. Around 20 to 30 million people died from the Spanish flu, some upwards of 80 to 100 million. So we meet them in the middle, let's say 50 million people died. Mm-hmm. Considering that the world population in the early 1900s was, 100 years ago, was only about 1.8 billion. Today it's whatever.
Wow. It's 7.981, something like that. Yep.
Yeah. So we're 4 or 5 times greater today, and that sizable, population. You're talking, if you do the numbers, 3 to 4% of the population, right in the middle, died from the Spanish influenza. So it was devastating, and also to kind of a difference of the pandemic that we're facing today, which I think we all know this. The elderly population today, the more sickly population, are more susceptible to getting sicker from the COVID pandemic and then dying. Whereas in that day, it was younger people, especially younger women who were pregnant. So people of all ages were dying from this. And you mentioned it, Padre Pio had it, and he didn't have it terribly bad. It's kind of hard to diagnose because we're talking 1918. Yeah. The letters and his correspondences were somewhere between October and December of that year. He was bedridden a couple of times, he was sort of in and out of bed. And two of his letters, he said it's due to the Spanish fevers, is kind of how he said it, febre española. So the Spanish fevers is what they were saying it was. But also, you mentioned, you know, two major events, this influenza we're talking about, also the World War. But in September of that same year, Padre Pio received the permanent stigmata that he kept for about 50 years until he died. So right in the middle of this, there's this, you know, major visitation by Christ on Padre Pio himself. So those of us like me who are so devoted to Padre Pio, and this is not a message of Stefano in the book, but I kind of see something in this. You know, you mentioned Fatima. Mary is appearing to these children of Fatima. And two of the children died from the Spanish flu also.
Yeah.
Mary and God is doing something in the midst of all this. As the Spanish flu is raging, as World War One is raging, he's visiting these stigmata on Padre Pio, who's just a you know, normal young priest from a local priest who speaks dialect most of the time. So I think there's something to that. And again, that's not a message of the book. It's kind of my personal interpretation.
I love the advice he gave. So he had this. My understanding is that he offered himself as a victim soul to end the influenza. And I think it's so many people with COVID today who are suffering. You know, they're achy, they have headaches, they can't breathe. I mean, we all have an opportunity to change the world by joining our suffering to that of Christ. And I think of how many people have had COVID. We can take a great lesson from Pio, can't we? Offering ourselves as victims for the end of this pandemic. So what did he do? Fill us in.
That's the message of Padre Pio in his life. When he received the stigmata, he had a calling, a special calling, a visitation by Christ to offer his suffering, his Christ-like sufferings, for the conversion of sinners and also for healing of the sick. So that was Padre Pio's calling. So suffering he had all kinds of illnesses. But when he had this particular Spanish flu, that's what he was called to do. He offered it for other people. And Stefano, the writer of the book, has at least three references in letters that people, one or two, it's very clear. Another, it's the woman writing the letter believed that she had been, and the other two had been healed through Padre Pio's intercession. So he had all kinds of amazing gifts, like you described. One of the gifts he had was to take on to himself the sufferings of others that would lead to the healing of others. And I translated a different book by one of the last remaining living sons of Padre Pio, spiritual sons of Padre Pio. His name's Adolfo Apatato. And he's 83 years old. He knew Padre Pio for about 16 years between his 16th birthday and 32nd birthday when Padre Pio died. And he's a spiritual son. I just read them all the time. He has a story in his book about how Padre Pio went into an illness, a deep illness, and his fever would spike up and he would be bedridden for about a day or two. And when Adolfo's son was being born, he was born, there were some problems with breathing. Padre Pio offered himself for the deliverance of his son, and his son healed. And Adolfo went to Padre Pio after that. And he said, if you only knew what I went through to save your son, you would thank me for the rest of your life. So Padre Pio has a special gift. Not many of us have. It's the gift of a victim soul, where you know, God asks certain people to take on sufferings like Christ suffered, to sort of carry that cross, you know, with him. So Padre Pio had the Spanish flu, and that's just naturally what he did. He offered it up himself up, and there's at least three people who are, you know, cited in the letters referenced by Stefano, that happened to.
Yeah, I love it. I was reading about what was happening in San Giovanni at the time, where, you know, schools were closed, like COVID, very little commerce. The town was brought to a halt, and some of his spiritual daughters came to him. They were terrified. They begged, you know, him to save them. And he said to one of them, he says, look, don't fear, never fear. And this one line is what struck me. He says, put yourself under the protection of the Virgin. Do not sin. And the sickness will not overcome you. Although some of the daughters, of course, fell ill, none of them died. But I just thought the protection of the Mother of God and lack of sin. I mean, you know, do not sin. And if you do, get the confession, of course, and sickness will not overcome you. It was kind of striking to me that the sin, in some respects, make us more vulnerable to sickness. I don't know, but protection of Our Lady, no sin, and he said the sickness will not overcome you. Your thoughts on that?
It's very simplistic. It's very innocent and very pure. There's a lot of purity to that. And we're going back 100 years, or just over 100 years. And so, you know, as far as medicine and science of the 20th century, really the last part of the 19th century, science and just medicine, our knowledge has exploded. So back then, we're just starting to, if I'm not mistaken, I think they discovered penicillin just after that, but would have had no effect on this because this was a viral pandemic. It wasn't a coronavirus, but it was a virus, the Spanish flu. So penicillin works on bacteria. So there's not much medicine out there. And Padre Pio did get visited by two doctors, and they kind of wrote up a long explanation of, in, you know, very medical, Latinate kind of scientific language, but, you know, saying he did not get that sick. But there was nothing that they could do anyway. They could sort of treat some of the symptoms, but you're using very basic remedies at the time.
Yeah.
Maybe some things would seem superstitious to us today. Things like my mother-in-law used to do. We lost her last year, but she was from southern Italy, was born in the 1930s. You know, when the kids get sick, they would put olive oil on their rash or, you know, things like that. So they didn't have much medicine. So it was very simplistic, but very holy also. And, you know, for all the emphasis we're putting on these vaccines, which is good, and medicine is always good, it helps us. The Spanish flu disappeared after about 2 years. Okay, so I'm not, certainly not an anti-vaxxer. When the vaccination comes available here, I'll go get it. But on the other hand, you know, you said it, put your faith in God, trust in Mary, and do not sin, and it will have no reason to touch you.
Yeah, it will run its course.
A lot of wisdom in that.
Well, Brett, I've got to leave it right there because I'm up against the clock. I know it's late. I'd love to have you back. There's so much we can talk about. We've only scratched the surface, but a lot of lessons from Padre Pio. Let me give you the final thoughts, though. What would be the one takeaway you want to, what would you like to leave with us, the one takeaway for those who are listening today from Padre Pio, maybe from this book and the times in which we face?
I would say just trust in God's providence. That's a sort of a recurring theme that comes back over and over. If people are going to him, like you said, he was considered very holy as a priest. He had the stigmata. It was just coming out. He had all these gifts. People were going to him. And that's one thing he says just over and over and over, and people are confused by what's happening. And in one part of the book, Padre Pio tells a story to a journalist who had been up in northern Italy during the war, and there was these war refugees, these children refugees, who were going from Genoa sailing to go to some place where there was going to be an orphanage. And the boat crashed, shipwrecked, and almost all the children died. So there's a journalist up there who had observed that. He came down to Padre Pio. He's a spiritual son of Padre Pio. He's asking him, you know, how does God let this happen, this, you know, tremendous suffering? And Padre Pio says, imagine that there's a mother who's sitting with her child on a stool before her, and she has an embroidery, and she's embroidering. The child on the other side looks up at the embroidery and sees all these non-harmonious colors and these threads that are ugly and doesn't make any sense. And then the mother turns it around and shows the child the front side, and it's a beautiful embroidery.
Wow.
And the mother says, and Padre Pio, and we understand what it means, all we see is the ugliness of what's happening.
Right.
You know, God is embroidering and creating something beautiful.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a delight to talk to you. We'll do it again. And get some rest. Thanks for staying up so late. That's Brett Thoman and his book. If you want to read this, you want to learn more about Padre Pio, The Pandemic of Padre Pio, Disciple of Our Lady of Sorrows. He translated that book. But stay with me when we come back. I'll bring you up to speed on the latest regarding COVID, blood clotting, and so much more. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Now. All right, from the great Spanish flu to COVID-19. And they say, you know, on average, you know, pandemics do happen. I don't know what the, at one point in time, I thought it was every 100 years. Some people say, no, it's actually a lot closer than that. But, you know, whoever thought that you and I would live through something as devastating as what we're now experiencing. But it was nothing like that Spanish flu. As we talked about, it took tens of millions of lives. And the way that many succumbed, it was rough. It was rough. So where are we today? Let's talk about that for a moment. And I don't know whether you're tired of your mask, if you got your shot, if you're not getting your shot, if you've had COVID, if you're ready for life to resume. There are tens of millions of people right now all across the country who've been vaccinated. They've gotten their COVID-19 shot. You might be one of them. You might work with somebody. Right now, there are three approved vaccines for use here in our own country, right? We have Pfizer. A lot of people have gotten that. It's two shots. Moderna, I believe that's two shots. Johnson & Johnson is a single shot. So that always sounded attractive, although there's some other issues that you may not want to get that one. You know, there's some reasons for that. But I should revise it a little bit. Johnson & Johnson was in use up until yesterday, to be honest with you. The federal government, they advise that states put a pause on its use. So, again, I just want you to be informed as you go to get your vaccine, if that's what you're going to be doing. Know what vaccine you want. I know sometimes you don't have a choice, but I would be pretty specific. You know, it seems that there have been some issues with blood clots with Johnson & Johnson, although I do know somebody who got it. And for the amount of people that have been vaccinated, I don't know how problematic that is, but AstraZeneca had very similar issues over in Europe. So as you heard here yesterday, Denmark has gone ahead. They said they're just not going to use the AstraZeneca vaccine anymore. So you've got issues with AstraZeneca. You got issues with Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson was looking at becoming, you know, the dominant vaccine because it's a single shot dose, unlike its competitors. You know, Pfizer and Moderna, you've got to take two shots and they have to be timed 3 weeks apart. Plus, the J&J vaccine didn't require any special kind of, you know, storage system, just ordinary refrigeration. The other two required being in some serious, you know, sub-zero temperature. However, the J&J, you know, they ran into some manufacturing problems a little while ago. They had to trash about 15 million doses of the vaccine. I mean, what a loss. So that's a serious mistake, of course. And now this blood clot issue has come up, very similar to AstraZeneca. So I know there are some people concerned. Here's what Dr. Fauci told CBS Evening News when he was asked about Johnson & Johnson's vaccine being paused.
So people who just got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine are worried. What should they look out for?
Well, it depends on when they got it. It appears that this adverse event occurs within between 6 days and 13 days. So if you're beyond 4 weeks and you've had it a month or two ago, I think you really don't need to worry about anything. If you are in the time frame of within a week or two of having gotten vaccinated, remember one thing. This is a very rare event. It's less than one in a million. Having said that, you still want to be alert to some symptoms such as severe headache, some difficulty in movements, or some chest discomfort and difficulty breathing.
That was Dr. Fauci. A lot of people look to him as one of the foremost experts when it comes to COVID-19. Senator Rand Paul, who is a Republican from Kentucky, he reacted to the vaccine discussion on Newsmax television. Here's what he said.
I think the main thing is in a free society, each individual assesses their own risk and makes their own decisions. And what medical decisions I make really are nobody else's business. No one should make me produce papers to say that I've agreed with somebody to have a vaccination. That being said, I'm for the vaccine, particularly for high-risk individuals. If you're above 80, above 70, or if you're overweight and above 40, all those people I would consider to be high risk. If you're less than 25, death rate from this disease is one in a million. And under age 25, COVID is actually less dangerous than influenza. So the answer is just not one size fits all. So with regard to Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, they're made the same way. They're both used, they use the adenovirus, and there have been some complications.
That was Senator Rand Paul. He's also been critical of Dr. Fauci because Senator Paul believes, you know, you shouldn't have to wear a mask after getting the vaccine or having the virus. And we'll talk to Dr. Bhattacharya coming up in just a moment about that. But I don't know if you remember him saying that. We'll look at that coming up. Hey, look, we'll take your calls too. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to dial in. The number is 888-914-9149. Maybe you've gotten your vaccine. you know, feel free to share the experience. Maybe you've got questions. Dr. Bhattacharya will be with us in just a moment. You can get in at 888-914-9149. Just to put this in perspective, too, I don't want to leave people disillusioned. According to the reports that are out, the clotting, you know, that Johnson & Johnson vaccine has had, has happened in just six women, just six, between the ages of 18 and 48. That's out of nearly 7 million doses that have been administered. I should get my calculator out and see how, you know, small that percentage is. I mean, women out of 7 million doses. That's not a lot of people, you know, who've been affected by this in a normal situation. It's very small that would undergo that category. But here's a possible side effect that happened to a very small number of subjects. It's probably the way they should have, you know, phrased that, because, I mean, the news media ran with it too, and it could really freak out a lot of people. I've got the Johnson & Johnson. I'm worried about clotting. It has some people wondering if there's something more going on than meets the eye, especially after the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. They had a committee that issued a statement saying that they'd like to put a pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine for another week. So what are they looking at? Here to help us decode all this, to better understand the vaccinations and what's being reported, is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. He teaches at the Center for Primary Care and Outcomes Research at Stanford University School of Medicine, and he's a specialist in infectious disease. He's been with us in the past, and I'm always grateful for his time. Doctor, welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me, Drew.
Thank you. So news breaking, as I say every week, there's always something new. You know, there's a new development when it comes to COVID. I mean, there's always something coming out. The blood clotting issue is a concern, I know, for a lot of people. And yet it seems so infinitesimally small, you know, seven out of the millions that have been inoculated. Tell me about these clots. What happened to the women who had them? Maybe give us some perspective.
Yeah, so my understanding about the women that have them, so the blood clots occur very rarely. Less than one out of a million patients who've had the Johnson vaccine have had these blood clots. The blood clots happen in the brain, and if you catch it early enough, you can treat it. If you don't catch it early enough, that it can be deadly. So it's a very serious event. My understanding is that the women that had it, they caught it early enough, but I don't have the full information on that. So in any case, the key thing is that it's one in a million, and you have to compare that against the harm from COVID.
Right.
And for people who are over the age of 50, that's the other thing that's important about these blood clots. This syndrome tends to affect younger people just in general. And so it's not surprising in that sense that it's younger women, people between, up to age 48 and no one above 48 had these blood clots. Above age 50, the risk of the blood clots has been zero, which is the first experience thus far, despite millions of doses for people above 50. So I think what the CDC and the FDA, what they decided to do is that they decided to pause the use of this vaccine to wait a couple of weeks to see if the people who just most recently got it, how many of them end up with these blood clots.
Wow.
And to verify if this is really associated, if it's just a spurious side effect, because these blood clots happen even without the vaccine in the population, again, very rarely. So I think that's why they paused it. I actually think that's a mistake. The rate is zero above age 50. Hmm. The vaccine is incredibly useful to prevent COVID-related death and hospitalization for people above age 50. There's no reason not to use it if you're above age 50. And the pause creates this sort of sense that there's something wrong with the vaccine, which may make people not want to take it, which I think will almost certainly cost some lives.
Okay, my guest today, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. I'll grab your calls in just a second. Let me just follow up, since we're talking about clotting. Not just J&J, but over in Europe, there were some concerns about the AstraZeneca vaccination. Were the AstraZeneca issues similar to Johnson & Johnson? Is it the type of the way this vaccine came into being? I mean, what do we know about why these two are having issues and the mRNA ones aren't?
Well, the AstraZeneca vaccine and the Johnson & Johnson use a similar mechanism. I think, Drew, we talked earlier about like some of the ethical issues around the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Right. It was derived from these immortal cell lines that were originally derived from aborted fetal tissue. So, I mean, I think there's some people who legitimately have ethical issues around it. But from the biological perspective, it's similar. It has a similar mechanism of action as the AstraZeneca vaccine. It has this adenovirus, which is inactivated, so it can't replicate in your body, but it can infect cells. And inside the adenovirus is some DNA that your body then uses to produce this spike protein, which it reacts to and then creates this immunity to COVID. So that's the mechanism of action of both the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The key thing, the question about the mRNA vaccine, does it have that same problem? It could actually have rare side effects. I mean, I think the mechanism that people think is that there's something about the spike protein that induces clotting. And so it's not that we know for certain that the other vaccines don't have it. It's just we're pretty sure, in fact, very, very, very confident that the rates for all of the vaccines of this clotting abnormality are very low. And so then it's just a question of the risk-benefit calculation. So if you're over the age of 50, say, the risk of the clotting is zero, at least thus far.
Wow.
And the harm from COVID is enormous. If you don't have ethical issues with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and you're over the age of 50, just from the raw risk-benefit ratio kind of calculus, I'd say take it. If you have obviously have ethical issues, then take the mRNA vaccines, which don't have these same ethical issues. If you're under the age of 50, well, I mean, then you have to do a kind of like if you're 15 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vaccine not approved yet for 15-year-olds, but let's say you're 15. But the risk of COVID is really low. The harm from COVID is really low if you're 15. Fewer kids died last year of COVID than of the flu. More kids died of the flu last year than COVID last year.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
I wouldn't say. I mean, why? It's really much closer. Like, why do I want this really rare side effect versus a really rare bad outcome from COVID? Right. It's a much closer question. If you're older, not a close question. Take the vaccine.
So I'll tell you, I'm going to grab some phones, and we'll take calls from those who are on hold here. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149, but I have to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll jump into the phones. Before I do that, though, the flu. I'm hearing people say it's been virtually non-existent this year. Is it because people are washing their hands, wearing masks, socially distancing, or is that not true? Is influenza and the flu over this past winter and this past season, has it been, has it run its normal course? I don't know the info to that. I was hoping you could maybe shed some light on it.
The flu has disappeared. It's disappeared in basically every country, no matter what policies they follow, lockdown, no lockdown, mask, no mask. The best hypothesis I've seen for why is that there's a phenomenon called viral interference, where one virus interferes with the operation of another virus. It's sort of a poorly understood phenomenon, but it could explain why the flu disappeared in Australia, in China, in basically almost every country on Earth for almost the whole of last year, although starting to come back in a couple of places, I think.
That's so wild. It really is. My guest today, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. If you want to join us, it's the final segment of the program. I'll jump into some calls. We'll allow you to speak to the good doctor as well. 888-914-9149. Stay with me. I'll be back in just a minute.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
We'll connect you to some clarity. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. More on demand on the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. Thanks for joining me. If you missed any of the conversation today, I mean any of it, you can simply go to my show page and tap into my podcast. Please share the podcast with others. Just go to relevantradio.com, look for my show. This particular broadcast today, it'll be up in about an hour after I sign off. Jake will get it formatted and ready for you to download or to share or to stream. And anything that we've discussed in the past few months, it's up there. So you can dive into more conversations on COVID-19 or listen to anything that you might find intriguing. It's been some great, great conversations there. Hey, if you're just joining me, we're talking about some of the big news regarding the vaccinations. There's been some blood clotting issues with AstraZeneca, with Johnson & Johnson. Denmark permanently banned AstraZeneca over a blood clot issue in the EU. CDC is, of course, putting a pause on the J&J vaccination right now. I don't know whether you've gotten yours yet or, you know, what you're planning to do. There are variants that are fueling some surges right now. We talked about the South African variant, and, you know, Pfizer doesn't seem to be as effective against that. So really do your due diligence if you're going to get your vaccine. Know which one you want to get. But let me go back to the phones. I'm joined today by Dr. Bhattacharya, and as I mentioned in the past, he's been with us before, and it's always good to have him here with us for his perspective. He is an infectious disease doctor and can certainly shed some insight. Doctor, it's good to have you back, and let me see who we're going to start with. Let's go to Diana. Let's go to Marianne. I'm sorry, she's holding here. Marianne in Wisconsin, good afternoon.
Hi.
I
think you guys just answered my question, because I just got my Pfizer shot yesterday. And then last evening, I thought I had heard on the news, and wasn't positive that I had heard that the South African variant, the Pfizer, doesn't work very good against it. And I'm thinking, oh, great, you know, and I just got Pfizer. What's the story on that?
So I can address that. So I actually also had the Pfizer vaccine myself, and so did my mom, who's 80. So the Pfizer vaccine is effective against basically every variant. If what's the outcome you're looking for is to basically get rid of the probability of dying from COVID or hospitalization from COVID, it's very effective even against the South African variant against the severe outcome from COVID. It's a little bit less effective in preventing infection altogether than the other variants. Yeah. So I think as far as like you should be confident that you're protected against a severe outcome from COVID especially after you had the second shot. You're very unlikely to get the hospitalized. You're very unlikely to die from COVID infection. You may, and so if you get COVID, and it's, by the way, incredibly rare that people will get COVID after they've been vaccinated. That does happen, but it's less than one. I mean, I think it's one in one million, something on that order. 6 million, 6 in 1 million, something on that order. And in any case, it's incredibly rare. But when it does happen, it's a mild infection rather than a severe outcome from COVID.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that was a study that was done over in Tel Aviv, right, in Israel, where they were finding that the Pfizer was not as effective against the South African variant. There's lots of different variants. How long do you think we're going to be battling these different variants? We're going to continue to see more of them? And then will we need a booster, doctor, for our vaccination?
So that's a good question. So the variants, the virus itself mutates all the time. Okay. There's tens of thousands of variants in that sense. The vast majority of them are not operating any differently, or if anything, weaker than the wild type virus. The few variants of concern that people have looked at have come out in places where essentially the disease is on its way down. So, for instance, the UK variant came into prominence in late December or mid December, around the same time when the cases were starting to decline in the UK. Right. Same thing with the South African variant. The cases declined as the South African variant became more common. Mm-hmm. So they don't actually cause a resurgence. You're still protected. Suppose you had COVID before with a different variant, with the wild type. Well, you're still protected against the variants. Yeah. You may still get infected, but you won't get a severe outcome. And that's the thing we actually care about. It's not a big deal if you're infected if it's just a cold, right? And that's what the vaccination does, and that's what previous infection does. It protects you against reinfection, even against the variants.
Yeah, here's a bit of news that just came to me. Somebody emailed me. They said the third Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine dose will likely be needed within a year, says CEO. Those who completed the two-dose regimen for Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine will likely need a third shot within 12 months. There's also a chance that people will need to receive an annual COVID-19 vaccine thereafter. So what is the bottom line on this? And then I'll grab another caller too for you here. you know, if my brother-in-law, I saw my brother-in-law this weekend, and he says, I got my shot. And the question is, he says, but I'm not going to get another one. So I don't know whether this is going to be an annual thing, it's going to be in your flu shot, whether you need boosters. What's it look like in terms of these vaccinations for people who have already had their first two shots? How long does it last?
And I think it is very premature to say one way or the other on that. So for natural infection, we know confers at least a year and a half, of maybe even longer, of immunity. Since it's been, you know, like 13 months, or actually longer, since the first cases came in, and we've seen very, very few reinfections among people who have been infected naturally. It seems likely to me, based on the evidence I've seen, that it's similar things are going to be true for the vaccine, but they haven't been in place long enough for it to do any careful studies just to say one way or the other on that. So when the Pfizer president says that, he's going ahead of whatever the evidence says. It's that there's no reason to think that we're going to need that. There's also no reason yet to think we don't really need that. We have to wait and see. If I had to place a guess on this right now, based on the evidence that I've seen, it's likely that we probably won't. But we'll see as the science develops on this.
Right. All right. Let's go to Lucy. She's a physician listening in Florida. Lucy, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. My question for the guests, and thank you so much. I've learned much from this program already, but a couple of things. I have done women's health for many years, and was wondering, I didn't help but notice that these are women in the reproductive age range, and I was wondering about if they looked at the people that are on hormones, because we know that that does increase the risk for blood clots. So I didn't know if they looked at confounding factors that may have contributed to that blood clot risk, because to me, like you, it seems like a very, very small risk, and I was very surprised to hear that the CDC had pulled it. But I guess that brings to my second question is some information bias towards the mRNA vaccines versus AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson, because, there was those deaths in Kentucky in the nursing home shortly after receiving the mRNA vaccines, like six nursing home residents in one nursing home alone that had basically died within 24 hours of receiving the vaccine when they had had COVID about 14 days prior. So I don't know if you were familiar with that and if you could comment on that. And if you see that there's any kind of, and that kind of fresh pass is unrelated by the CDC. So I didn't know if you had seen anything along those lines or if you could comment.
Great.
Sure. That's a great question. I heard two questions, and I'll try to address both and what I know about them, which is actually, unfortunately, a limited amount. So, on the question of hormones and let's say birth control and other things that may have predisposed to this event, I think that this is something the CDC is still investigating. But you have to remember, there were six cases out of millions of doses. And lots of women also take these hormones that had the vaccine that didn't have them. So it's not just in order to decide whether these are causally linked, you'd have to do a careful study like that, and they haven't done that yet. If I had to guess what the result is going to be, and this is just a guess, obviously you still have to do the result, I'd say that the vaccines produce an infinitesimally small increase in that risk, less than one in a million. The decision by the government to pause the vaccine was too excessively cautious, because it'll create uncertainty about this vaccine, which, as best I can tell, is as safe as the other vaccines. Six out of 7 million doses is obviously, for the women that had it, it's unfortunate, but for the most part, it's a safe vaccine. Like a vast, vast, vast majority of people, it's a safe vaccine. Then you had a question about the nursing home.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I hope that people don't not take the vaccine because of this. As I said, people may have moral qualms about how the vaccine was produced, and that's, I think, a legitimate reason not to take it. But over safety concerns, I'm not so sure. For the question about the nursing homes, because there's been now at this point tens of millions of doses of the vaccines given, it is actually a relatively common side effect to get some allergic reactions. Common, like not one in a million common, like more like, one in a thousand or even more for some of the side effects. I think 10% of the people get, 10 or 20% of the people get fevers and headaches after the vaccine. So the vaccine can produce these sort of relatively mild side effects. And if you're giving it in enough nursing homes in enough places, you're likely to get these kinds of like coincidences of multiple people getting it. I suspect that's what happened in that nursing home. If you give it enough nursing homes with enough people having it, you're going to get some cluster somewhere, just out of, you know, random statistical chance. But I do think it was a smart strategy to provide the vaccines to nursing home patients, because that's where the COVID risks have been. 40% of the deaths from COVID have been in nursing home settings in the U.S. You know, 80% above the age 65 have been the deaths from COVID are among the people that are over 65. So vaccinating the older population is really important.
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Lucy, for your call. I got to hold it right there. I have less than a minute. My deep apologies to everyone on hold. A lot of people wanted to join you, doctor. We'll have to bring you back again. But as we wrap it up today, just final thoughts in the remaining 60 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're older, please, please don't let this pause stop you from getting the vaccines that are available. Do your due diligence. Drew, you tell your audience that, and I completely agree that that's what they should do. Compare the risk for yourself. And I think that what you'll come to is it's worth it to get the vaccine, especially if you're older.
God bless you, doctor. Thank you for your time. Always appreciate your insight. Stay tuned. Cale Clark is coming up. Your news and headlines are straight ahead. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until our paths cross, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great afternoon.